Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday, it's April 25th. We've got 44 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, definitely with some clouds, and currently in the Heber Valley reporting 43 degrees. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Thursday or happy Friday Eve to you. This morning is starting off on a very similar note compared to what we've seen in recent mornings. It's fairly mild. We have the mix of sun and clouds around. But if you look up to the sky, you might actually be able to see some changes because there's a little bit more moisture in the clouds this morning because moisture is now beginning to increase as a cold front is approaching from the northwest. As we go through the next few days, we're going to be looking at a very big shakeup in our weather after our relatively quiet and warm stretch of weather. We have two storms that are set to move through. The first one moves through today, and the second one will be moving through between Friday and Saturday. So while we're looking at relatively quiet conditions out there right now, there's still roughly a 20% chance that a shower or even a rumble of thunder finds you before 1 o'clock this afternoon. We'll see a temperature climb into the mid and upper 50s, which is about 5 to 10 degrees cooler compared to what we've gotten used to. And then as we move from the afternoon into the early evening, we'll be looking at a 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms. So after a relatively quiet start to the morning with a slight chance of wet weather, we'll be looking at an increasing chance once we move into the afternoon. So it's one of those days, if you have any plans to be outside, definitely keep your eyes to the sky. With the temperature climbing to the 50s in Park City and into the 60s in the Heber Valley, we're mainly going to see rain out of this. The snow level likely going to be quite high through today, mainly above 7,500 to 8,000 feet. Then as we move into tonight, cooler temperatures will filter in, but we'll only drop into the mid and upper 30s. So it's more likely that we stay with rain showers through tonight with maybe some snow mixing in as we drop to 38 degrees in Park City with a 70% chance of showers sticking around. And then that second system, as we talked about, moves in tomorrow. And I think the system tomorrow will have a little bit more energy and a little bit more moisture. So it's a likelihood that a shower will find you. It's probably not going to be one of those days where it's nonstop 100% of the time, but we could see rain for most of the day, with maybe a few breaks with mostly cloudy skies with the temperature coming in at 46 degrees. So we'll be well below our seasonal averages to round out the work week and move into the beginning of the weekend. But with the highs back into the 40s, still mainly going to see rain in Park City. But as we drop into the low and mid 30s on Friday night, some of that rain could become snow, and we'll hold on to a chance of rain and snow showers on Saturday as the daytime high comes in at 42 degrees. So it's one of those situations where we could be looking at a wintry mix, times of straight snow, times of straight rain, and through Saturday night with the overnight low dropping back to freezing again, holding on to a decent chance of wet weather. We'll be looking at maybe seeing some minor accumulations around Park City, maybe on the magnitude of 2 inches, but it could also be one of those situations where we stay mainly rain with just some snow falling from the sky. But Saturday brings an 80% chance of the rain and snow. We'll drop to a 40% chance by Sunday as our storm system begins to clear. Maybe a few lingering showers a possibility on Monday, but once we move into the middle of next week, we should begin to dry things up and warm things back up. We should be back in the mid to upper 60s by next Wednesday, Leslie.
Okay. Thanks, Thomas.
You're welcome.
Coming up, scheduled to talk with Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails. Later on, Summit County Councilmember Tanya Hansen recapping yesterday's meeting, and Park City developer Rory Murphy with an update on the Engine House development underway, as well as the outcome of last year's landslide there at King's Crown. Finally, Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder with details about this month's gallery stroll and more happening Friday night. And then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio from 9 to 10. Today's guests include University of Michigan geology professor Nathan Niemi, who talks about their annual summer geology field camp here in the western U.S., or what he likes to call the best field trip ever. Then Jessica Swanson, a University of Utah assistant professor of chemistry, shares her research on using biological methods to remove excess methane from our atmosphere. Again, all of that coming up today on today's Cool Science Radio, heard from 9 to 10. Joining us now on the phone with our summer trails update, we've got Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy, what are we, Thursday, Park City. We've got Wasatch Trails Foundation reporting that they have got everything in the Dutch Hollow area good to go, nice and dry out there. Phosphate East, Pine Canyon Bike Park, and Flow Trails are also good, and the WOW Trail is dry up until the first pine grove. Jordanelle Ridge Trail System is beautiful right now, and some slightly muddy spots on the high traverses. Trails out of the Cutthroat area, or the Cutthroat Trailhead, off of Highway 32 are not ready yet, so steer clear of those. They're saying also that the Blue Sage Ranch area is riding well and could use some tires on the outer loop. Rick at Mountain Trails is reporting that Sky Ridge is dry. It's good as an out and back if you're looking for a good climb. The Big Dipper and Sky Ridge hiking trails are still holding pockets of mud, so maybe steer clear of those. Round Valley is actually, I was out there yesterday, it is really remarkably dry. Rick's saying that they've got about 75% is good to go. I would just say stay off the Highway 40 side. There are springs there that that even if the other trails in the system are dry, those trails tend to stay muddy until the springs have kind of faded away a little bit later in the year. So again, everything in Round Valley is good except for the Highway 40 side. Looks like we've got that's right. We've got erosion maintenance on the Round Valley Express. We're doing a big overhaul of the double track through Round Valley. It got kind of blown up this past two winters, and so we're going to be doing a bunch of grading work out there. So just if you see the excavators working, just steer way clear of them. They can't hear you. The machine is noisy, and they may not see you. So if you see that, it's on you to stay clear. Basin Rec's reporting that the Trailside Bike Park, Trailside East, front side of Glen Wild are all dry, but the 24/7 cobblestone routes are still very muddy. So that's a wrap for today's trails report. We'll hope to see you out there.
Okay. Hey, Laura, thanks.
Yep, thanks. Bye.
Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a meeting recap, I have Council Member Tanya Hansen. Good morning, Tanya. Let's see. Let's start with the fact that Council Chair Melina Stevens yesterday announced that there will be a subcommittee to look in more detail at Dakota Pacific's proposal and then the county's counter proposal. So who's on this subcommittee?
We have Candace Hart, Candace and Chris Robinson, legal department, and a couple of staff members are on that committee.
Okay. And the idea is that the committee will be meeting in closed session in the coming months to look at the feasibility of different items that have been proposed. So how are these meetings protected from the open meetings law?
Well, legal has told us that we have the opportunity to meet. There will be no decisions made. It's strictly venting the ideas that were put forward specifically around land trade. There's a lot of details and nuances to doing anything like that, and we just felt to move this process along, we needed to have a subcommittee working on this. There will be no decisions made. Anything that's discussed will be brought forward to the entire council and the public. It's just to help vet through some of those details that are going to take a lot of time.
All right, so how will that progress be reported in public meetings?
I think what will happen is, in my mind anyway, there'll be a couple of meetings, three or four maybe, and the information from those meetings will be brought back to the entire council and the public, probably in one meeting. I don't know. Perhaps as we go along, you know, we're sorting this out as we go along. Perhaps after every meeting, they'll come back to the council and the public. But I really think it will be one big work session after they've kind of discussed some of these items.
All right. Let's see. Yesterday's meeting kicked off with a presentation from the nonprofit Summit County Clubhouse, which provides resources and helps adults with mental illness find community. So why did that clubhouse present to the council?
Strictly information, educational opportunity to share with the council what's going on with the clubhouse and the public. You know, I think it's important for the public to understand that this service is available. It serves adults living with mental health challenges such as depression, anxiety, bipolar, PTSD, schizophrenic, and it helps members achieve their highest potential. So I think perhaps a lot of people don't understand that this program is available, and it was simply information.
The Executive Director, Jen O'Brien, said that she needs more staff and money. Is that something the county can provide, or does she need to look to private donors and grants?
I think all of the above would be helpful. It's something we'll be looking at as we go through the budget process in the fall.
All right, so nothing immediate then. It would have to wait till next year.
Right. She, of course, says she has needs for more staffing and resources for the house, that type of thing. But anyway, yeah, we'll see how that goes in our budgeting process.
All right. The council approved an interlocal agreement to contribute $5,000 to a UDOT grant, which totals $150,000, to fund a study of South Summit State Route 32 corridor and the future development's impacts. So Oakley, Camas, and Francis have all opted to come up with money for their portions?
They have verbally committed. They haven't put that in writing yet. So our transportation department came to the county first for approval, and then we'll go for signatures from those other cities to move this forward. But this is a great opportunity. You know, I mean, we're donating $15,000, Summit County and the other cities, and it will be $150,000 grant in total from UDOT. I think it's a great opportunity to look at SR 32 corridor and to create a vision and plan for addressing transportation, land use, and economic development issues along that corridor. So it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, so what's the importance of planning the Francis, Camas, and Oakley Main Streets together rather than having them done separately?
Well, that's all one corridor, so it would be nice to have a vision for the entire corridor, and it will help us be better suited to address all upcoming transportation infrastructure projects along that corridor.
All right. Now, the three cities, as you mentioned, need to collectively provide $10,000 on top of the county's $5,000. So what if one of those communities drops out?
They'll have to go back to square one and figure that out. I don't really know.
Okay, so it sounds like they'll commit to this.
They have verbally committed. We just need them to sign the dotted line.
All right. Let's see, the restaurant wrap grant. The county has a $4 million pot of money. Organizations asking for $5.3 million. Everyone across the board did have to get a lesser amount. Some didn't get funded at all. Basin Rec had asked for funding for new treadmills, which didn't get funding. So what is it that the Restaurant Wrap Tax Committee is looking for?
Well, this is a great program. And this has been in place for, this is the 33rd year for this restaurant tax. And it's a 1% tax charged to all restaurant sales in Summit County. And they are looking for, in their application process, does the application support sustainable tourism? Does the project guarantee future tourism? Will it generate cultural tourism? Ability to leverage grant funds to create more taxes in the future? Potential to increase visitors into Summit County? Those are some of the things that the committee is looking at in these applications.
Yeah. Now, you sat on this committee years ago. What was your experience?
Oh, it was a great experience. If people are looking for an opportunity to get involved, this is a great entryway into being involved in Summit County. You really look at almost every nonprofit in the county and what they do for lodging, restaurants, how they help drive visitors into Summit County, and what they provide to the locals as well. It's a great committee. I was on this committee for 12 years.
Yeah,
it was really fun, actually.
You talked a little bit about how low-tech the committee was. Has that improved?
How what? I'm sorry?
How low-tech?
Oh, how low-tech. Yeah, I mean, this was, and I hate to say this because it makes it sound really old, but it was before Excel. Now they put all the scoring into Excel and push a button and rank these applications. In those days, we did it all with a little handheld calculator together as a committee kind of ranked them. So I think the time involved now to be in this committee is much less than it was in the day. But it's a great committee, and it's really interesting that several of these applications are the same as they were when I was on that committee.
Now, Summit Bike Share got a grant, and that's now an in-house function of Summit County. So what is the county just pays itself? Is that how it works?
Well, we work in conjunction with the chamber on that as well. So, you know, we do feel that the bike share program helps give an amenity to visitors coming to town. And so it's a great opportunity for guests to get out of their cars and get on bikes. But it's a standalone program.
All right. So, I mean, does it have to be a collaboration then? I mean, when the county asks for money, or can it be a standalone, like with the Summit County Fair? Who's your partner there?
That's the fair. Nobody's the partner. It is the fair, and it is specific programs for the fair. It's not just the general fund of the fair. So it's for the entertainment, or it's for the rodeo. It's specific programs within that organization.
Okay, but so Summit County is allowed then to apply for these grants
for specific reasons. Yes.
Okay. You did talk a little bit about that collaboration, how it makes an application better. Why is it that the committee would favor those?
Well, I just think it helps the funding go further. You know, you're not just one entity out there marketing one program. It's two entities collaborating, marketing those programs together. And I think that's a good use of your resources, both personnel and funding.
All right. The Utah Chinese Association applied for the second year. They didn't get much money last year, but they include more detail in their application this year about a history tour about Park City's mine era Chinese population. Of course, we've got the China Bridge as sort of a historical artifact about that. Will we see a tour this year, or what can you tell us about that?
Well, I thought this was a really interesting application also. And for those folks who don't know, in the day, during the mining era of Park City, there was a huge Chinese population that lived in town, and they lived at China Bridge. That's why it's called China Bridge. So this application is the second application for a fall heritage tour and a photo contest to educate and reach historical contributions from Chinese laborers who toiled in the early years of the Park City mining history. And it looks like their goal is attracting Asian American attendees to Summit County and to share with them this heritage. And it seems to me that they're planning to do this this fall, second annual Summit County Fall Heritage Tour. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's specifically for marketing that event.
All right. And then the council kept $1,000 in the bank. Why not just give it all away?
Well, that's entirely up to the committee. You know, I guess we could have said, hey, reallocate that $1,000. But things come up along the way that you might need that. I don't know what that might be. But they can roll that into next year. That's $1,000 isn't that big of a deal.
Okay. The council looked at an annexation petition for Park City for a parcel within unincorporated Summit County that wants to be part of Park City near Aspen Springs. Staff wanted to know if they should oppose it. Was there any reason to oppose it?
No reason to oppose it. This parcel is surrounded by Park City municipal parcels. It's like an island unto its own. And so Park City was waiting for the owner to come forward and seek to annex into Park City. And because it's an island, I see no reason for it not to be annexed into the city.
Yeah, you had asked if there were any other sort of unincorporated islands like this. Did the staff know of any?
They thought there was one generally in this same area, but again, they're waiting for an owner to come forward and want to be annexed in. So they think that's the only one out there.
All right. During council comments, Councilmember Candace Hart mentioned Mountainlands Community Housing Trust working on an assessment of affordable housing's economic impact in the Wasatch Back. He suggested looking at the document with the county's mayors and with Park City. What's your sense of what this document's going to tell us?
You know, I don't know anything about that, Leslie. Thanks for asking the question, but I'm not really familiar with that. Candace thinks that we should bring it forward to COG and let our the cities and mayors look at that document to understand the viability, the need, the assessment of affordable housing in their municipalities and in the county. So I'm really anxious to look at that and see how it can help guide our decision-making process.
All right, and he didn't give a timeline on when this document would be ready. Do you have any idea how close it is?
Well, I'm hoping in the next couple of months, because we meet with COG, I think, in May or June. So I'm hoping in the next meetings we can be looking at this document.
All right. Polly, I wanted to ask you, some members of the county council also meeting, are already meeting to budget the county's employees' salaries, even though the budget doesn't get approved until December. Why are we starting so early?
We wanted to get a head start on that, because we really feel that we need to focus and look at things in more detail. When we get into the heat of the budget cycle, there's just so much information coming at such a fast pace. You know, sometimes we just don't do justice to those details. And this is just one way of getting in front of it and understanding those details. And so when it comes to the budgeting time, we're just more informed.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
The one thing I would like to mention to the public is back to the Summit County Clubhouse. If there are people out there who are interested in this program or need help, the resource available is info@summitcountyclubhouse.org. And I would recommend, if people are needing help and support, that they go to that website and see what's available.
Okay. Tanya, thank you.
Great. Have a great day.
Well, a year ago, after a record-breaking snow year, a landslide broke near the property line between the King's Crown Project and Park City Mountain. On the phone with an update on the resolution of that, as well as an update on the Engine House development, is Park City developer Rory Murphy. Good morning, Rory.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the landslide happened April 30th of last year, and as we originally reported, it measured about 100 feet in length and about 70 feet wide, with an estimated to be about 15 feet deep at its deepest point. So what do we know what happened here?
Well, obviously, we had some contribution of conditions that led to the slide, and obviously the very heavy snow year was a significant contributing factor. And slides happen when the underlying geology gets saturated with water and the stuff on top is not stable enough, that when the clay layer underneath gets saturated, the stuff on top will slide under the right or wrong conditions, if you would.
So originally we had heard that there was no damage, but was there some when you got into it?
Well, the damage was the hillside, obviously, but it did slide into some lower units at the Marriott. Some windows got broken, and they have not been able to use, I believe it's three rooms, just out of an abundance of caution. Hasn't really gotten any worse since then. The worst, I think, is over. But there was damage. The very bottom toe of the slide did hit the Marriott Hotel, that first floor of the Marriott Hotel.
So was it on King's Crown property, or is it on Park City Mountain property where this happened?
The slide started on King's Crown property. It crossed over Bale property and then entered Marriott property. So there were three landowners involved with the slide.
All right. And is somebody liable for this? I mean, was it due to construction, I guess, is probably the right question.
You know, getting into liability right now is not something that I should talk about or care to talk about. It's really what's happening right now is the reason it's becoming a news story is we're starting a remediation effort with the top. The first thing you have to do is stabilize what they call the head scarp. You know, all this terminology that I'm learning that I never cared to know. And so what we're doing, the first step before you can even start to clean it up, is you have to stabilize the head scarp, which is up by King's Crown property. And that is a pretty extensive retaining wall that will go in up there. And then we're hoping, we're working through the application right now with the various municipal authorities that we need to understand and get satisfied with the construction of the retaining wall. And so what we're hoping to start very soon is that process of stabilizing the headscarp, and then we can, you know, take the next step following that.
So is that on King's Crown then? I mean, is that something you're paying for, and it's your application?
It is. It is. Yeah, it's, you know, the thing about it is, Leslie, and the thing that I truly want to emphasize is that, you know, we were blessed. I mean, no one got hurt, you know, and no one got injured at all. You know, it's property, and it's aggravation, it's time, it's a lot of money, but, you know, nobody got hurt. And that fundamentally to me is the best thing. You know, it's great that we are in, you know, the position now where it would be 100 times worse if anyone had gotten injured. So, you know, first of all, I feel blessed about that, but it's, you know, obviously we're spending a lot of money to fix this thing and, you know, to try to get it stabilized so everyone can get back to how it was and move forward with their operations.
All right. So you're able to get into the area okay with the heavy equipment that you'll need?
We will. What we're doing now is we will be coming from on top from Rockwell Road. This is, you know, all things considered, hoping that everyone gets to a point where they're comfortable with the project moving forward. You know, we have to get through some regulatory issues, but the hope or the plan is that everything comes in from the top, and we're able to do all the work up there. It's a very, very steep slope, obviously. It's one of the reasons it slid, and we do not want to disrupt the resort operations. Vail has been spectacular in this, just really, really helpful, and bending over backwards every time we ask to get on the property or that kind of thing. So I can't emphasize enough how great they've been in our efforts to try to remediate this.
All right. So a city water line and a storm drain were also located in the area of the slide. Were they unscathed?
No. The storm drain did wash away. And that's pretty dramatic. A small part, upper part of the storm drain did wash away. The water line was not affected, but we did uncharge it. We took the water pressure out of it. Both of those were primarily put in place to service the resort parking lot project when and if that comes to pass. The not so much King's Crown, and the idea right now, but we do have redundant water at King's Crown, so even though the line got uncharged, we haven't had any water issues at all. And the drainage for that line, where it broke off and had problems, we don't really drain any of King's Crown into that. So King's Crown as a whole did not get affected. The utility line certainly did. And we have part of the application in front of the city right now is, you know, they're asking us what are the plans with those lines, work with Public Works, work with engineering, and come to us with something that's acceptable to everybody.
All right. So I guess you're not seeing anything else like that this year then? it seems to be stabilized at this point?
Yeah, you know, I think that the worst is over there. I think the, at least this is what the geotechnical engineers have shared with us, that the worst that is, that could happen has happened. It doesn't mean the entire hillside is perfectly stable and we don't need to do anything. That's far from it. But we haven't seen any additional sliding or anything like that, despite a pretty heavy late winter snow load. You know, I'm not sure how much different it is now compared to even last year, because we had so much snow in February and March. And I certainly spent a lot of time worrying about it, but I have not seen anything yet that indicates it's going to get a whole lot worse.
Okay. So do you expect the construction on that retaining wall to begin then and be completed this year?
I do. I do. We're hoping to get it done for the spring, during the kind of low tide of tourism in Park City, so that we can not affect any bookings or that kind of thing with or any of the resort operations or anything really. So we're hoping to start on that as soon as possible. And once we get going, you know, these shoring companies are pretty darn good at what they do. It should be about 3 to 4 weeks once it commences.
Okay, well, let's move on. Construction also underway there at the Engine House development off of Kearns Boulevard and Homestake Road, of which you're a partner. So how's that development going?
It's going very well. Despite having, we probably had 20, 25 snow days this year, but despite that, we just have a spectacular supervisor and project manager there. Those guys have kept things moving along, and so we're actually in better shape right now than I thought we would be, and it's all going according to plan. And we've had some issues we've had to work out with water on the site and things like that, but we're hoping that we will be completed by summer next year, and June of next year is our goal.
Wow. The developer is Jay Fisher. Is this a him or a firm?
It's a firm, Jay Fisher Companies, and they specialize in these what are called LIHTC, or low-income tax credit, affordable housing projects. They've done a bunch in Salt Lake and Boise and the Intermountain West in general, and they asked me if I would work with them on this project. They bring all the expertise relative to this LIHTC funding, which is just enormously complicated and difficult to obtain. And, you know, and I work with them on the construction and the entitlement and just working with the city and their citizens and trying to get things taken care of.
Yeah, you mentioned water issues. What kind of soil issues did you come across as you started digging?
Well, it is in the soil district, so we had to do the testing. And it was an old railroad switching yard. And so we had, there wasn't any mining there. Luckily, no tailings from the slurry line got over to that property. But the water line, the soil was, we did have some high levels of lead, and that was to be expected because what would happen is they would load up these, the rail cars, and sometimes the stuff would slough off. And so you'd have, and it was loaded with ore, which of course is high in lead and zinc. So when we did, I think it was 20 or 30 sample sites on the surface, we found high lead in three of them. And so what we decided to do, we worked with the city environmental office, and we took the first 3 feet off, and that was sent to the proper repository. And then after that, we just kept testing, and no surprise to anybody, everything's clean from then on. We just have an area that, and this isn't unusual, we have some pretty deep footings and foundations where water has collected, so we just got to figure out the proper drainage system and how it's going to work and get that sorted out.
All right, there's 123 units, 99 of them are considered affordable. They're all rentals. Why was rentals the way to go here? Is that to receive those affordable housing tax credits?
That's right. The entire program is contingent upon the remaining rentals and also remaining in the rental range that the Housing and Urban Development, that HUD places on it. And HUD reviews it. My understanding is every 2 years they'll apply the area median income and various other calculations to every county in the United States, every municipal area, and you have to rent them within that range. And it's a 99-year obligation.
Now, the majority of the units are, 80 of them are two-bedroom units. Was some kind of study done to determine that that's what is most needed?
That's correct. That's exactly what was done. And the two-bedroom has the most versatility of the potential rentals. I mean, you can, obviously families need more, but Park City tends to be fairly transitory, as you know. We turn over population pretty consistently, but you also have us diehards that aren't going anywhere. And the rental unit, once you get in there and you're renting a unit, if you pay your rent, you can be there the rest of your life. And it's the rates are such that it's achievable for people even with modest income to have a place to live in town. And the whole idea was this is going to be a big generator for the working people in Park City. You cannot exceed a certain income and be you can't rent it if you exceed a certain income. You're out of compliance. And so now what happens if you rent one and you get a raise? That's a whole different story. It's that's accommodated in the whole LIHTC program. You don't get thrown out if you start making $70,000 a year as opposed to $60,000 a year or that kind of thing. I mean, that's accommodated, but it can be a long-term play for somebody, a living situation for somebody that needs that, or it can be a 1 year. And the minimum is 1 year. You can't rent it for less than 1 year. And so it's for people that are going to work here.
Yeah.
That's our goal and our desire.
So every unit gets one parking spot because there's 140 spots?
That's correct.
And are those...
It's the same... Sorry.
Those are underground?
They are. And it's the same situation. Like, I did a pretty good... We did a pretty good affordable housing component at Silver Star. And the same program, one space per unit. We did the same thing at King's Crown, and it's certainly inconvenient for those that must have two cars, but that's part of what you're buying into. It's that, okay, we're trying to get cars off the road. That's one of the goals of having people live in town, is to reduce the traffic that is becoming overwhelming. And you get one car. If you can figure out how to get a second one, that's your business, but you're not going to get it in the garage. And so it's meant to control and to accommodate the traffic in town.
Okay, I've got to leave it there, Rory. Anything that you really wanted to add to this?
No, I think we're in good shape. with both projects, and I appreciate you calling me.
Okay. Appreciate your time, Rory. Thank you. Rory Murphy again with the Engine House Development and King's Crown. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City Gallery Association hosting its monthly Last Friday Gallery Stroll tomorrow. In the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, Jocelyn Scudder. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this month it is a progressive bouquet stroll. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Gallery Association actually has done a lot of work recently to figure out ways to kind of reinvigorate and add new activity to gallery strolls, especially to incentivize at this time of year for locals to come out. And so they have, throughout the year, actually, you'll see these themes come up. You might remember in February, there was a chocolate stroll, and we brought on a bunch of different chocolatiers to have tastings in the gallery. And so this month, so this is tomorrow night, Friday, from 6 to 9 p.m., there are 10 galleries participating in this. And so, and the point is, right, every gallery has their own singular flower. So it is encouraged for you to visit many galleries to then curate your very own bouquet. And it's just kind of a fun, especially, you know, again, I can't emphasize enough, this is a time for locals. And I think we all kind of take a nice deep breath at this time of year. And I just encourage so many of you to come out and really enjoy these assets that we have in our community. We have some fantastic galleries, not only on Main Street, but also dispersed down kind of that Bonanza Park area. So the 10 participating galleries include Create PC, which is actually the Arts Council's local artist collective over at 1500 Kearns. Also JG Art at the Prospect. That's the Prospect Executive Suites over in Prospector. Formerly Jago Gallery. You probably know Jude Grenny. She's a longtime gallerist here in town. Trove Gallery at the bottom of Main, Summit Gallery and Relevant Gallery also towards that lower Main Street. And then we have Gallery Mar, David Beavis Fine Art, Meyer Gallery, Mountain Trails, and then all the way at the top of Main, we've got Susan Schwartz. So I think it's a really just a fun way to get out there, maybe, you know, check out some of the restaurants that are still open this time of year, and enjoy yourself and go grab a free bouquet.
Okay. Bring a raincoat.
Yes.
Create PC has also put out a call for artists. What's this for?
Yes, so Create PC is the Arts Council's newest local artist collective, newest iteration, I should say. We've been running this program since 2019, and we've found its newest brick-and-mortar home at 1500 Kearns, just behind Tupelo. And it's a local artist collective. It's two floors. The first floor houses fine art and artisanal goods of 40 local creative makers. So this is an exclusive representation of Summit County artists and makers. And we're really excited to present this to the community. And we are going to have rotating exhibits throughout the year because we have a wait list for participation and we have limited wall space. And so what we've done is created an opportunity for rotating exhibits. The current exhibit has been up since February, and that's our winter exhibit. And so we're going to take that down mid-June, go dark for a few days to just kind of recurate and maybe paint the walls a bit. And then we'll pop back up with another hopefully totally new curation of local artwork. We may have some repeating artists, that's quite common, but we'll encourage them to bring new artwork into the gallery. And so if you're a local artist, fine artist, or even a ceramic artist, a jeweler, these are all things that we represent at the gallery. As long as you're a Summit County resident, you qualify to be represented here. And we try to really place the benefit on the artists. Gallery sales are actually split at an 85-15%. 15% of an artwork sale is retained by the Arts Council to help with operating costs, but we really try to place the benefit of this local artist collection on the artists, and so they get 85% of the sale. Now, there is a participation fee, so that's something to consider. But what we've heard from the artists is that they're willing to pay a monthly fee to keep this local artist collective alive, to make sure that there is a home for local artists, which is really, it's a massive justification for the work and makes us feel really motivated to continue the collective. So the opening for this new show will be June 28th. If you go to pcscarts.org, on the Create PC subpage, you can find a link to apply, and you'd really just have to, you know, let us know your medium, making sure that you're a Summit County resident. Send us some JPEGs of your work, and it'll be technically a juried show. And we'll pop that back up late June. Deadline to apply is May 17th.
What's the fee to participate?
It's $125 a month. Again, this was negotiated. We've been doing our best to work in lockstep with our artists to make sure, you know, we kind of popped this up. We found an opportunity for a building, but we weren't actively able to really fundraise in advance for it. It was just kind of this chance encounter. We wanted to harness the opportunity. And so this is where we love our artist community. They really came to the table and said, we're willing to help contribute to some of the operating costs to keep this alive. So if you're interested in this type of opportunity and in that, you know, great sales opportunity as well, please check that out at pcscarts.org. And then I forgot to mention, actually, for the gallery stroll at Crepe PC, we do open studios. So on the second floor of Crepe PC, we have 10 makerspaces where artists normally have kind of private studio space, but on Fridays for last Friday gallery stroll, we open those up to the public, so you can kind of have a sneak peek on the creative process, build connections with some of those local artists. It's a really cool space, so that's definitely a draw as well to come to Gallery Stroll. And while Crepe PC is off the beaten path, it might be a great spot to either start or end your stroll.
Okay. You're also looking for patio furniture. What are you looking for?
Yeah.
Why do you need it?
So again, this Crepe PC Local Artist Collective, it's a work in progress. It's a little scrappy, but the best art spaces are, in my opinion. And right now, you know, we moved in November. We curated an exhibit and got up and running in February. And now the sun is shining. We have a beautiful patio and some great grassy area that looks right onto kind of Monitor Drive area. I mean, it's a wonderful space. And so we want to start really promoting this space as a community gathering location, maybe having, you know, coffee Fridays and bringing in vendors. And so what we're doing is asking the community if they have any patio furniture that they are looking to discard. We would love a donation of that furniture, and then we're going to spray paint it in crazy colors, put it on the patio, and then we'll start programming and inviting people to come out and check out, you know, immerse in the creative space, check it out, but also come maybe grab a coffee and set up a coffee date or a meeting there. So we just released a call for patio furniture. If you're in spring cleaning mode, which I know many of you are, you could email Emma at pcscarts.org and she will gladly accept a donation for patio furniture to help really create a community creative space at Crepe PC.
Okay, and then save the date, the Latino Arts Festival
save
coming
the
to
date.
Canyons
yes.
back to Canyons Village.
Yes, so this is technically a teaser. We are putting out a formal press release next week, and you guys will have all the information on our full artist lineup for Latino Arts Festival, our main stage performances, food vendors. We've got a ton of nonprofit partners. We've got a ton of activity planned for Latino Arts Festival in June that's being held at Canyons Village at Park City Mountain. I can't thank Canyons Village and specifically Canyons Village Management Association, CVMA, enough for their partnership and allowing us, you know, we've been at that location since last year. It's really elevated the festival in massive ways and allowed us to scale and grow. And so the Latino Arts Festival this year is going to take place Friday, Saturday, Sunday, June 14th, 15th, and 16th. And again, by I think probably Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll have all this information on the website, and you can check out, we'll have 30 visual artist booths for Latino visual artists who are selling creative goods, fine art, and then some amazing culinary assets where we'll have many different culinary adventures where many different countries are represented. So Andrea Zavala, our festival manager, I'm sure will come to KPCW and tell more of that story next week, hopefully.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Let's see. What's happening arts and culture locally? I will say this is also the time for the Follies. Everyone knows it's Follies time at the Egyptian Theater. And that actually runs through May 5th. And while it's sold out, it is absolutely not something to miss. It's a classic lampooning of, you know, Park City happenings. It's hilarious. There's a local cast. It's a great thing to support. And even though it's sold out, you can call the box office and get on their wait list. And sometimes tickets are free. So definitely do that so you don't miss out. It is Follies season, and it's a great season.
Okay. Jocelyn, thanks.
Thanks so much.
Jocelyn Scudder is the executive director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.